You're listening to The God Journey, an ever-expanding conversation with those thinking outside the box of organized religion, with your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
Welcome to another edition of the God Journey. It's finally glad to add you guys to the conversation. Brad and I have been here for a couple of hours talking about some of the website stuff. Had a little dinner together with my wife. I'd love to get yours over here sometime and get those gals on the show as we talked about doing. You still got that in our heads at some point. But we've been talking about some of the practices of the show, and now we're grateful that you've joined us for this part of the conversation. It seems we blew our bandwidth last month there, Brad.
Yeah.
Got a notice late Friday night, which would have been the 30th of September, that we were right at the peak of our bandwidth. So that means the show has really been growing. I'm amazed at the number of people, not only that seem to be listening to the show and giving us some feedback, but almost everywhere I travel, I had one couple tell me Sunday morning, just said, you know what, we live. This is our biggest event of the week, is getting the new podcast and sitting down together in the evening and listening to it. I thought, man, get a lot. No, I didn't think that. I thought, gee, what a blessing that is.
Yeah, I think that's exciting. I think, what was it? There's something like 7,700 unique listeners that have logged in, and where are they coming from?
Well, we've got a list here. I mean, we just don't follow the statistics too closely, but because we were looking at bandwidth issues and what might we need to do to expand that and expand the usefulness of this, is we got to look at some of the countries people are coming from. And don't be worried. We don't know who you are. Okay, we just know that the tagline that your IP address has, but we've got obviously lots of folks from the States here, but outside of that, in order of folks that are listening to us from various countries, we've got Australia and Canada and Denmark in the top three. That's kind of interesting. I wonder what's happening in Denmark. That's the country of my heritage, so I'm really interested in that. The European Union, not sure who all that would contain, and then Japan. So quite a few listeners from Japan, from Great Britain, from South Africa, and if some of you are listening to this, particularly those that I met down there, man, I still have great memories and great affection for my time in South Africa. We've got folks from New Zealand and Sweden and Germany and the Netherlands and Singapore and Ireland and China, interestingly enough, South Korea, Hong Kong.
Is that legal in China?
Let's not discuss it any further. Nigeria, Taiwan, Switzerland, Zimbabwe, France, Thailand, and Kenya.
My favorite was the unknown.
Yeah, we do have some unknowns, so we were wondering what that might be.
Probably from other planets.
You think?
I have no idea.
So
I
Mars
don't know
and
what
Venus
unknown
have checked in,
to.
And maybe the moon on Jupiter or something. But we're just blessed that so many of you are finding this a place to hang out with us, because I look forward to this every time we do it, Brad. I look forward to sitting in the office here and talking about some of the things that are so important in our life, and knowing that they're encouraging to others is a lot of fun.
I think what's exciting is just to look at God's breathing on it. And if anyone out there ever felt like they were alone, obviously what you just ticked off is reality, is you're not. There are people all over the place, all walks of life, from all different countries. Father is leading them unto himself, and it certainly seems like people are responding.
And what's fun about this, one of the things I said to the interview with the Time editor, or the Time reporter last week that called me, was that what's fun about seeing God give life to people and people thinking outside the box of the way we've always packaged religion is that nobody's at the head of this. There's no author, there's no seminar, there's nobody driving this. It seems that spontaneously and simultaneously throughout the world, God's inviting people closer to himself. And the traditional answers for New Testament life and community aren't working for a lot of folks, and they're looking elsewhere. And I think this is an exciting time to live.
I think back to the story that came out of Ladysmith. It's like the sea really exists, and people have an absolute hunger to find reality. And God's leading them from just all walks of life to pursue genuine life in Jesus.
And it's okay to come and try and find it. It may not be easy. It may not be.
It's not easy.
It's not easy.
But it's wonderful.
Other people may not applaud you as you make some of your decisions to follow him where he leads you. But the life at the end of it, I love at the end of the Ladysmith story. Any regrets? No. And I asked that of everybody on this journey, even people that still seem to be all alone and nobody's around them. Any regrets? And people who are finding life, not just being reaction to something, but finding life in God in the midst of their living, never any regrets. Man, this is the way to experience it.
Yeah, I, what you just said there, I think, is really important, because I do, you know, you can be frustrated with church and react to it. That's entirely different than responding to our Heavenly Father, who is inviting us to live this out perhaps a little different way. And I think when God authors this journey and following Him, you will find people who say no regrets. If people are just getting hurt, bummed out, bitter, and reacting in that, yeah, you're going to have regrets. That's not the Lord leading us. That's our pain.
But sometimes it's where we start, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
We start with all that angst, and something fell apart for us, part of that disillusioning process. This thing really isn't what I thought it was. But it's important that somewhere in this moving on with God that we move away from what I hurt and reacting to embracing the thing that I'm really hungering for anyway that led that to that collapse. And hopefully that's what we want to encourage people to experience as well together.
Well, we had a bunch of response from the whole Koinonia Killers stuff, didn't we?
Oh, little mixed reviews, didn't we? Some people really loved it. Some people had some concerns that we were a bit freaking out.
Yeah?
I love Dom's note to us. Dom from California wrote on the blog and said, let me say this too. Some of you are writing to the God Journey blog. Some of you are feeding back to the Lifestream blog. No, it's a bit confusing because we're announcing these podcasts on both. If you could help us, we'd love to keep the conversation for the God Journey on the God Journey blog so that others aren't looking all over the place to try to find responses to it. So as best you can, try to help us keep it together. But Dom said this, I found this podcast to be refreshing, referring to the Koinonia Killers, and very helpful and even humorous. I love hearing Brad and Wayne just bellowing away. Can you imagine that bellowing away thing?
That must have been you.
Okay, see, there you go. With joy and peace, not wanting to bind up listeners with legalistic demands and rules in order to gain a personal spiritual walk. I tell you, if that's what's communicating through these podcasts, I'm pretty excited. Said, I thought it was really beautiful when they were describing the freedom we have in Christ. It makes me feel like I can relax a little bit on myself and not be so worried God is in my life to thwart everything. Interesting comment.
Well, that's an interesting take on who God is. He's the guy to thwart us.
Doesn't religion almost paint Him that way? I mean, we do all this hard work to earn God's favor or blessing in our life, but and then we don't experience it. And
yeah,
we
never measure up.
And we get the surprise. Yeah, well, we're never going to be good enough. It's never going to work. And I do think, I remember thinking about God as the divine frustrator and all that. That God's got all this carrots out there, you know, but you can never get to that carrot. That carrot's just, you know, one pole beyond where your lips can reach. And Dom, I hear you, brother. I've been there. I have felt that same thing. But I tell you, Scripture is so clear. Jesus saying, fear not, little flock. It's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. This is not something God is thwarting in us. Paul uses that word thwart for the devil. He doesn't use it for God. Certainly this age and things in it seek to distract us. But
I think God is definitely thwarting our religion and thwarting our efforts to try to make ourselves pleasing unto Him. I mean, in that sense, I do think that,
He is
thwarting that. He's thwarting all of our strenuous, straining at the oars efforts, trying to make something happen that is not what He's called us to. And I do think He is. I mean, He's asking us to relax and enjoy the life. I mean, if He can set a banquet table for us in the presence of our enemies, that's a pretty good life.
Absolutely. Absolutely is. But not everybody was so enthralled with the podcast, were they, Brad?
No, we got a guy named Andy from Japan. His opening line was, this podcast was disturbing.
And I've had coffee with Andy. Andy's a great guy, too. So
he says, I think a follow-up is in order to explain in positive terms how to love broken people. And not just broken. He says, can you talk about loving people who are physically or mentally disabled? I don't think going to church or being in fellowship with others is meant to be a drag. But what do you think about the word compassion as suffering with? Again, this isn't a theological query, but related to having relationships with people who are broken, suffering, and disabled, cut off from most of society, accepted by some of those who are so-called very faithful people in churches, perhaps not someone you would naturally relate to. That is, it may take steps that feel unnatural to enter into these kind of relationships, and he's kind of wanting us to sort of talk about that dynamic. What do you think about that?
Well, Andy, I think you're the reason why we're directing this show the way we are, and we're calling it Koinonia Cultivators. We did talk about some of the things that kill Koinonia, and this time we thought it'd be great to take exactly what you said. You're obviously talking about people here who are physically or mentally handicapped in some way, as to thinking that would be a drag on Koinonia. And I really appreciate the opportunity to clarify this, because, man, I think we tried to say last time, we're not talking about people that are difficult to love. We're not talking about people who are immature or whatever. We were talking about more of those kinds of things. Look for maybe more in ourselves than other people, but the disconnects for fellowship, what harms fellowship. And certainly people who are just growing and taking baby steps in this journey, as What About Bob would say, or people that are physically or mentally handicapped in some way. This reminded me, I was with a family in South Africa, and I had a night in their home, and they have a daughter, I think young teens, if I remember right, who's a Down syndrome child. And this family, when you relate to this family, as they talk about this, their youngest sibling, even the sister, I think it was a sister and a brother. But when you talk to the parents, they don't feel like their family is losing anything. They feel like this life, this younger sister that is afflicted with Down syndrome, has brought great joy, great simplicity, great life into this family. And I think I think Andy's right to be concerned about that. I think sometimes people that are difficult to love, who can't fit into religious structures well, sometimes do get left out. I think that was true where I have worked in the past. But in family, there's room for everybody. I mean, there's room for people who are broken in ways that want to be whole and want to experience life. And I don't find them a drag at all on this kind of fellowship.
We're definitely called to love the unlovely. I think the whole clarification is, when you're trying to cultivate true fellowship, and I think it oftentimes happens not in the naturalness of life, but when we're trying to be intentional about building community, I think a lot of what we were talking about last week, in my mind, was related to the fact that, you know, there are people just with agendas that are going to kill the effort to bring forth community. And that the Koinonia killers, it's like, you know, if God's putting it in your heart to help initiate relationship amongst people and to help draw things together, and I think both you and I are like that, Wayne, I think a lot of times if we just allow it to just sort of unfold, most oftentimes if there's an agenda in the house, it's going to rule the day. Someone's going to step forth, try to manipulate that gathering or that little get-together towards that end. And we were sort of identifying a lot of that and trying to poke through, you know, sort of the false Christian niceness that we ought to just let that happen. Because right. The truth is that is thwarting the very life that God's wanting to bring forth. That's not just broken people or, you know, it's not
immature,
you know,
people.
I mean, it's frankly, it's a lot of people, you know. And the reality is we're trying to poke through that veil into the reality of being honest with the dynamic of what actually allows for the sharing of life. And it isn't the personal visions and destinies that we're co-opting others into building together. It is a genuine sharing of life. And that will happen more in a natural setting. And I think, frankly, in the meetings
And the fix certainly wasn't even for people who got a lot of agenda. It wasn't to throw them out. It wasn't to run around and hide from them. It was actually to be honest enough to say, well, hold on a minute. I'm not sure we're all on that page and we all want to go there. Because one of the things that I notice when people like that get to hijack a meeting, everyone else in the room knows it.
Yep.
And it's just a matter of somebody having the courage to say, well, hold it a minute. You know, appreciate that that's important for you, but that's not why we're here tonight. And there's ways to just honestly and compassionately give people the opportunity to grow out of that. Not just, you know, be nasty to them and throw them out and say bad things, but actually
excommunicate
them.
Yeah.
In fact, interestingly enough, one of the people we talked about last week, I had a chance to meet over the weekend. And they were somebody that was very dominating, more from a very a standpoint of just wanting everything to focus on them. Can't believe how God's changed them in the last 4 years. I haven't seen this person in 4 years, and just had a chance to talk to her. And I'll tell you, her whole countenance, what God's done in her life. I didn't have time to get the story. I told her I wanted to. I said, I wish I had time just to sit here and listen to what God's changed in you. And it's amazing. So, boy, you don't want to put people in boxes and say that's the way they're going to be for life. God's got the capacity to change people. And I think our honesty, as we said last week, is part of that process.
We were going to talk about the whole koinonia cultivators. I do think that the capacity to be honest with yourself and honest with God are probably two of the strongest needs about actually forging a genuine relationship, not just with God, but with each other. Is if you have that there, if you can find a way to somehow be transparent and just bedrock honest with this is what's going on, whether good or bad, I think that's the stuff that makes for the sharing of life. I think it's when there's the pressure to conform, the pressure to perform. I mean,
to look better.
The dynamics of how's it going? Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, it's like all of those are the facades and the veils that we put forth that are the inhibitors for the real sharing of life. And you know, probably one of the greatest cultivators that we were identifying in the last podcast was just the need for honesty to kind of cut through a lot of the veils, a lot of the garbage.
Absolutely. Dave kind of wrote in, Dave from Rhode Island, to answer Andy a bit, and I'd like to kind of drag his answer into this conversation too. He says, what I have been learning in regards to loving others, whether broken ones or the ones that seem to have it all together, is that I need to first see and grab hold of the fact that this Father loves me fully and has promised to take care of me. As I recognized His compassion for me, I became changed and became compassionate myself. We love because He first loved us. Understanding that has helped me tremendously to take my eyes off of myself and my needs and turn them towards the needs of others. I think this is a great example of what maturity provokes. As we get this affection from Father, then we don't have to orbit around ourselves. We can actually have enough capacity to look around and say, well, what do some other folks need? How can I help somebody else today? He says, I'm far from perfect with this. Sometimes it just seems like a nice theory when my own needs appear to be so great at the time. And we all know that. We're all in process here. The other thing I've been learning is that when you let go of people and let go of my expectations of them and those of myself, we're just called to love them, serve them, and not control the outcome.
Well, that's huge.
That's
huge. Right there. Because I think so oftentimes what messes things up or makes for the weird religiousness in meetings is you have someone with a need and then everyone thinks that it's their job to fix them, assuming as if we could.
Absolutely.
When the reality is the best thing we can do is be like the stretcher bearers and carry them to the presence of Jesus.
I think I noticed in my own past when you're caught up in religion, what you call love is really used as a weapon. If you do what I want, I'll treat you well. If you don't do what I want, I'll make life miserable for you so that you will do what I want, which is a lot of how we get hurt and treat people rudely and distantly, because it's all about, I love you enough to make you what I think you should be, which isn't love at all. That's just manipulation. And when you really learn what Dave's talking about, loved enough by Father not to have to protect myself, then my love for you is just that. It's to love you, take an interest in you, be part of whatever God's doing in you. I found myself saying to a group of people this weekend, if the only reason I'm trying to love my neighbor is because Christ told me I should, or I'll feel guilty if I don't, then ultimately my attempts to love my neighbor are really loving me. It's me. I'm trying to look better or not feel guilty, so I'm doing something for them. Well, they know I'm just a tool to my own affections and to my own kingdom I'm trying to build. And I really do think until we get the first relationship right, which is how Father loves us, until we get that right, we don't even have the capacity to love each other because we're so much of our agenda gets in there.
So much of Christianity and Christians' church, they talk about unconditional love. And it's a great term. It's a great idea. But frankly, it's nothing of what I've experienced in, you know, your average church gathering. It's what we get from Father. I think what is so neat about what Dave is talking about is, as opposed to looking to get what he needed from other people, he was finding it provided for him from the Father. And when he got that from the source, that opened his heart and gave him resources and capacities and changed him in ways that he knew he was different and thus had a capacity to reflect that. And I think that's one of the biggest keys. And if we're talking about, you know, how do you cultivate fellowship, it's like so oftentimes what goes wrong is we're trying to get from people what ultimately I can only find and get satisfied from God Himself.
And our conversation in Koinonia, I think, would point that out.
Yeah.
It would say, aren't we looking for something else here? Instead of let's look to God, this growing dependency. And I think Dave nails it. One of the big pieces of that is when I have a vested interest in the outcome of something.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say, so far as loving those that are hard to love, I need to take the matter to the Lord and ask Him what I am to do, then let go and allow Him to do it. There is such freedom in that, in letting go, trusting Him for the outcome, even though we may not see it. We may not even see it in our lifetime. To love people without an agenda, I think that gets closest to love.
Oh, yeah.
And he really gets to the, I think he gets to the crux of it here. And if we're meeting together because we're trying to build something, so I need you to be committed, so this looks good for that thing. And again, we're all wrapped up in what I need from you and what I hope the outcome is, rather than we're just people who are responsible to be responsive to God. We're not people who are supposed to fix everything, and not one certainly responsible for the outcome, only responsible for our response. Well, I know we've got some more we want to talk about here. Let's bring in Gil. Gil called our comment line and gave us some thoughts, his concerns as well.
Hi, Wayne and Brad. My name is Gil. I'm calling from South Bend, Indiana. And Wayne, I emailed you before regarding a house fellowship we started. I don't even want to call it a house church, especially now with your comments lately on the on the broadcast. But you were talking about koinonia killers. I want to take a little issue, I guess, to some of the things you guys are saying. I understand and probably understood going forward that you're going to always have people that come in and have an agenda and have something that they're looking to promote or push within the group. Many times we have people come for the first time, and it's like, wow, I have an audience. I think this is my 5 minutes of fame. But at the same time, that also happens sometimes with the people who are coming regularly. And I've always likened it to, much like you've said, it's not really institutional fellowship that we've moved from a building to the house, but it's family, getting together, sometimes every other week and sometimes a little bit more frequently than that. And I've always thought about my own family reunions and have noticed that there are some people in your family who you probably would not like to be around that much, but nevertheless, they're still family. And so I think with those koinonia killers, it's like what Jesus said, you have to find the best way to relate and still love with being able to correct at the same time. So just kind of wanted to throw that into the mix and enjoy what you guys are doing. You're doing a great job. Thanks.
You know, I think what he talks about in family is fantastic, because the reality is when we get together with family gatherings, you're there for the enjoyment of being a family. You're not really there for an agenda. There might be a reason that got you together, some sort of celebration or some time, but when you're there, there's a sense of really loving each other. And, you know, I think that that's a lot different than a lot of times when we're gathering around because of this purpose and that. The enjoyment of being able to just share life.
And just because someone's more needy or not as mature, I mean, the most important person in our family these days is that 10-month-old granddaughter. Shameless promotion here, I realize. But, you know, Amy comes in. She's not doing much in the fellowship thing to add to the conversation, but
all about her needs, isn't it?
I'm loving her. I mean, goodness, we just have a ball of little Amy. And if we could treat new believers that way, even some of these koinonia killers, people still caught up in themselves so much that they really can't see outside of it. If we loved them like we're loving up on Amy, maybe they would find a way out of that. You know, because a lot of it comes from their own personal issues and needs and their lack of knowing who God is in their own lives.
You know, one of the biggest things that we can give as a gift to each other is to accept people.
Take them where they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think so oftentimes what brings forth a lot of the inhibitors for relationship is people are just flat out insecure. Most people I know are insecure. The people that I absolutely enjoy hanging around tend to be people who are a little more secure about who they are. They're not perfect and they know it, but they're kind of secure in where they're at. And they don't seem to have the agendas. It's the people that are insecure that are, you know, they're having to perform, or they're having to promote themselves, or they're having to deflect or hide. And probably one of the greatest things we can do is, you know, perhaps ask the Lord, just say, God, what can I do to help this person feel a little more secure? How can I love them in some ways? There's something I can say or do that will help inject some of that into this moment. Because I kind of look at people a little bit like a Tootsie Pop. It's a little strange, but you know, the little commercial where the owls, you know, 1, 2, 3 licks and then all of a sudden he crunches through. A lot of times people have a hard shell around them.
Yeah.
And what I absolutely enjoy about is if you can somehow break through that hard shell to find your way to that chewy, wonderful center, which is like, look, every single person has been made in God's image and has something of that invested in there.
Has a treasure inside. And
yeah, if there's a way I can sort of help break through that outer shell, that's the person that gets to come forth that I get to enjoy, which is when God looks down upon us, I think that's who he sees.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the freedom to do that with people who love. It's not something that's going to happen in the meeting. I think come alongside people and loving them is going to happen outside. It's going to happen taking them out to lunch, having them over for dinner, helping them just be loved for who they are, a big part of that acceptance issue. It's not, we can deal this in the meeting, but it really is our relationships with each other. And most of us have learned that if people really knew who I was, they wouldn't like me. And that's that insecurity, I think, that you're talking about. And
yeah, I think that's one of people's greatest fears.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, when we were talking a little earlier about, you know, the whole love, and you even used the phrase love as a weapon.
For the religious minded, yeah.
Gosh, you know, I was thinking back to the sincerely, I think, motivated at the time efforts of, you know, the church program, like, you know, say, you know, servant evangelism, like, and I don't know, for some of this might be a sacred cow we're going to lance for just a moment, but I think so oftentimes...
Sacred cow tipping, we're calling
it. Yes, here. I think so oftentimes... A lot of our efforts to love people and to use the right language are poorly motivated from more our own end. I'm really loving myself because what I want to do is I want to use love as a means to get them to join our group.
Yep.
I'm not so much interested in just the act of loving them with no strings attached and no need to control the outcome.
Even the need to convert, whether they come to our group or not, the need to convert someone to the kingdom makes us, surprisingly, less loving. Because we're not just taking an interest in them loving. Yeah, I hope they come to know God. That's very different than, I want to make sure you do. That becomes very manipulative.
And I do think that perhaps that's why the world at large is a little bit suspect and has their guard up, is because at the end of the day, we are salesmen.
Yeah.
In that mechanism, in that system, we are trying to sell something, and we're definitely going to make you buy it. You know, and it's like, I love just looking at Jesus in the Gospels when, you know, he's healing people, he's feeding them, he's caring for them, and he's then requiring and demanding and asking nothing of them. He isn't trying to get them to go to a group. He isn't only for a few. He was saying, follow me. It seemed like he went around doing good, healing, you know, people and taking care of everyone who is oppressed of the devil, and just doing it with no hands attached. I mean, it's like he was loving them, and that in and of itself, there was, I believe, a confident trust that will yield something in the Father's hands.
And when you're not worried about the outcome, you do have the freedom of honesty. You think about Jesus and the rich young ruler. I mean, that guy walks away discouraged. But you don't know what the rest of the story is. I mean, Jesus entrusts him to his journey, too. You don't know that what Jesus said to him doesn't provoke some kind of change and something later. We just don't know that. It's not there. But the fact that when you really love somebody, it is taking an interest in them. It is being honest with them. It's not, love's not just being nice, as we said last week. Love is taking an interest in someone's well-being. It's seeking to be a blessing in their life and any way you can think to do that. But trusting the outcome, how that bears fruit, it needs to be in God's hands, not ours. Or we will manipulate people.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the greatest things that I valued being, quote, outside of the system is that I no longer have to peddle anything. I don't have to promote anything. I can sort of communicate and gossip about the genuine love of Jesus without having to force an issue out of it other than to just freely be able to give it and declare it. Absolutely. Be a witness to it.
Absolutely. And I, getting back to what actually cultivates koinonia among God's people, you talked about honesty earlier. I was part of a group in another town this past weekend, and we were going to talk about our relationships to God. And it's among a group of people that I expect there to be a certain amount of posturing and pretense. I'm going to put a better face on this than it really is. I just expected that. And the first person that ventured in to share was so nakedly honest of just, man, I'm really struggling with this. I know there's a better relationship out there than I'm experiencing, and I don't know what the disconnect is. That the first person sharing that way changed the whole group, I think, or at least had some impact, because everyone else that tagged onto that wasn't, there was no posturing in the room. There was no pretense. People just opened up and said, well, here's where I'm struggling. And I think that bit of honesty, the honesty that drives us back to a dependency on Jesus, not, I think performance always has, we're comparing each other because this really hinges on how well you're doing. When we know it doesn't, when we know this hinges on what God's doing in our lives, and at any various seasons, some of us are going to be through very difficult, painful places, and others may be going through real joyful, fruitful, harvesting kinds of moments. But the freedom to let God do in these things what He does, and not feel like we have to posture that dependent on Jesus, not focused on just our needs, but really on Him, those are the things that foster the kind of community that I really enjoy when I get with folks.
Yeah, and I think also being able to recognize and help people recognize that whether I'm experiencing some joys and blessings and some things that we think of in fruitful life terms, or whether I'm going through trials and adversity, God can be the author of both. He's not always, but He can be. Absolutely. And so that He's not absent when it's hard,
absolutely,
present when it's wonderful, but the realization that you know, in terms of what's going to cultivate it, recognizing that He is all in all, God's there. And if I don't have to fix you when you have a problem, then perhaps I really can share in what's going on. Perhaps I really can be of value because I'm not trying to solve and define away your problem so that we have the wonderful Christian life. But I'm actually going to listen. I mean, I think, you know, the biggest blessing about my being dethroned from being a pastor is I gained two ears.
Wow.
I started to listen because I didn't have this need to always talk.
Yeah, you don't have to be the answer man anymore for everybody.
Or even for myself, because flat out I didn't have the answers.
And the reality is, if you're not going to try and fix me, I'm going to let you in on more of my life. Because I want somebody to share it with me. I don't want somebody to sit there and throw me their pat answers or what might have even worked for them. This whole Hebrews talking about us needing a sympathetic high priest to draw mercy and grace in time of need. What day of my life do I not need mercy and grace?
Wow, that's good.
What day of my life do I not... That it's. I think Scott Peck says it in one of his books about community. He talks about it's our brokenness that brings us together. It's not our wholeness. It's not where we're strong. It's where we're weak that we can identify with each other. And if we had the honesty to be with people that you can share your brokenness with, your struggle, your doubt, and not somebody jump on you and say, well, that's not faith. No wonder God's not going to be, you know, if people just say, gosh, you know, I doubt too. I know what doubt is. I know what it is to struggle with things that I know to be true intellectually, but I'm not living yet with in the reality of my experience. And so I do think brokenness and openness and the fact that we're all here to grow dependent on Jesus and trust Him in greater freedom and His affection and love for us, that things happen. And in that sense, I think what Andy started us off with and what Dom talked about, really turning our heads toward those who are in need. This is a big test for me of whether community is about me or it's about God using others to touch my life, using me to touch others' lives. I think of this. I don't like the word James uses. You know, if he updated vocabulary, he wouldn't have said religion, probably, particularly the way we talk about it. But in the same way that poor Gil wouldn't talk about house church anymore, poor guy. We don't mean to mess up too many of his vocabulary. But James said it this way: religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unpolluted by the world. I mean, you can't say, I mean, we think about being Christians together. We don't think about looking after the most needy. We think about Bible studies and high, lofty, moving worship moments. And, you know, we have it all scoped out that way. And James says, it doesn't get any better than this. You want to get close to God's heart. Find somebody that's in need, even as well as insecure people that need somebody just to love them out of that brokenness. Now we get close to Father's heart, I think. The word compassion that Andy used.
I had a good friend of mine give this illustration. It's really changed my life. He said, compassion in the English is the same compound word it is in the original. It's come and passion. The old English meaning of passion was suffering, like the passion of Christ. And what he said was, compassion means to run to suffering. When my brother was dying of MS, his best friend at his funeral said, for the last year I couldn't stand to be with Rod because it was so difficult to sit there and watch him struggle with MS. And I think, boy, what love is rushing to suffering. It's not running away from. And I think a lot of our own religious convenience sometimes, people suffering, people going through tough times, parent dealing with the suicide of a child or death of someone they love or a sickness that isn't getting better, it's awkward, and so we kind of step away. But compassion is to rush to suffering. It's I want to be there when I don't know what to do. And this friend that was sharing this with me, actually he's a Methodist, one of those pastor types in the Methodist club. And he said the best picture of compassion on 9/11 is the firefighters and emergency workers. When everyone else is running out of the buildings, they're running in. They're running to suffering. We're all trying to run away from it. And people who are being changed by God, I think James gets to it, we're going to rush to suffering. We're going to find the people. The psalm talks about taking the solitary, the individual, the person that's kind of alone, left alone in the culture, and bringing them into family. And that Father's family is big enough to contain that. And I think that really shapes what is this about for us. Just me finding fellowship so I'm happy? Or is this me participating in Father's family in a way that, does wonderful things in my life, but really puts me out there to give my life away? And maybe that's where we really discover what love and life is.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to get into any of this, but I'm kind of excited about, I think, where our next podcast is going to go, because I think one of the things that really cultivates fellowship, relationship, is you have to be available. I think so many of our lives are absolutely busied out where I don't have any time for you, I don't have any time for God, I barely have any time for me, because we're under the tyranny of industry. It's like, I mean, the catchphrase, how you doing? Oh, I'm busy. Oh, you must be important.
That's right.
And I heard someone unpack busy as an acronym for being under Satan's yoke.
Oh, my goodness.
And that floored me when I first, someone shared an email. It's kind of like,
I didn't know we were going to talk about this. I'm not sure I want to talk about this.
No, but in terms of just the whole dynamics, it's like, I've got to create space if I want to experience relationship with other people. And I think so oftentimes that's one of the first steps, is just simply open your schedule and then allow God to maybe do something.
Yeah, we're actually going to hear from a man from Australia. I think many of our listeners, and I've enjoyed too, hearing from brothers and sisters all over the world, a little Ladysmith story, a brother in Tulsa. And we're going to hear from a brother in Australia that I interviewed a couple of years ago. He'll take us on this journey and talk about some of the transformation in their lives. And I'm sure this koinonia issue and how we discover real fellowship together will be an ongoing conversation with us. So if you'd like to participate, there's always the blog, there's email. And if you can keep it on the God Journey blog, if some of you just move over there from Livestream, that'll be helpful. Our comment line, like Gil used this week, 805-626-4212, 805-626-4212. Why don't you give us a call and add your questions or comments or insights or discoveries to the conversation, or do it on the blog so everybody can kind of see and participate as we continue together.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like more information about this webcast or would like to join in the conversation, you can find out more at thegodjourney.com. It's our hope that this webcast will help us all recognize God as He really is in the reality of our own lives.